Welcome to Energy Medicine Radio with Dr. Wu Di and Elove, a celebration of unique healing modalities for your mind, body, and soul, opening the pathway to wellness, enlightenment, and creative living. Our mission is to share consciousness-shifting information with humanity and help people improve and transform their overall quality of health, wealth, and happiness. Thank you for joining us.
Greetings and welcome to Energy Medicine Radio with myself, Elove, and Dr. Wu Di.
Hi, everybody. Wu. Yes, how nice. It's a wonderful pleasure to be on. And tonight we have a special guest. As you know, I've been involved in energy medicine for some years. And when we're talking about energy medicine, we're talking about really three different phases in life. It's the warrior phase, you know, and a warrior phase isn't always fighting. Sometimes it's your financial outlook. Sometimes it's your health and how you keep yourself in physical shape. And then after the warrior, as you grow into something, you grow into the healer and you learn healing techniques, how to heal yourself and keep yourself healthy. Then finally go like into the priesthood where you really round the body out. Some years ago, I think it was back in 06, I met a gentleman in Tampa, Florida. His name's Matt Fury. And Matt Fury is definitely a warrior, a healer, and a priest. And he's going to speak to us tonight about fitness, about energy, and a whole multitude of wonderful things. So I'd like to introduce a friend of mine, a mentor of mine, Matt Fury.
Thank you, Woody. Matt? Yes, sir, I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for that introduction. I'm a little embarrassed, you know. It was so good.
Matt, you've helped hundreds of thousands of people in more than 143 countries with your best-selling books and courses. And this has been a journey for you. Tell us a little bit about this journey and where it began.
Wow. Well, that question always stumps me because I can start just about anywhere. But let me just begin with my early days. When I was 13, I really decided I wanted to become a champion athlete, and I dedicated myself to that. Along the way, some so-called mind power techniques and such came to me and helped me become better. Throughout college, I studied all of this mind power. I studied hypnosis. I studied visualization, affirmations, and all this. Then post-college, I got into business for myself and also into Chinese martial arts. And during that time, I started to learn about energy and breathing and relaxation and more. And I learned to apply my mind, not to a sport anymore, but to my business, as well as to my martial art training, and weave the two together in a way that I could get the best out of both. I went to China in 1997 after several years of training, and I won a world championship over there in a style of kung fu that was the original style, beating the Chinese at their own game. Came back from there, really decided to take my business to another level, and moved to Florida, continued to train, continued to learn, and as I did, I just kept evolving and changing. And as I look back at who I am today compared to the person Dr. Woody first met, I'm very different even from then. So my best-selling books and videos initially were more of what Woody's talking about, the warrior, like the physical, get fit, get tough. And now, many years later, I'm more into the internal part of getting tough or being healthier. And so it's not so much, it's sort of like the difference between an external martial art and an internal. Most of what I do is very different from what I used to do. There's more focus on the breath. There's more focus on opening the channels, opening the meridians, getting the energy flowing in the body, as opposed to how big and strong is this muscle of mine. I'm more interested in what can I do with it beyond martial arts, beyond fighting, and that takes us into, let's say, the healing realm. And as part of that, I've really dedicated myself, I guess, to evolving and making myself a better person, a better everything all the way around. In part of this journey, I basically, at the peak of my business, took like 7 years off and just did a little bit to keep it going, and spent 90% or more of my time with my children and so on, helping them develop athletically, passing on knowledge I have to them. And just recently, this year, I started, I call it coming out of the cave, like, you know, the legend of Bodhidharma. He went into the cave for several years, and then he came out, and he taught the I Ching Jing and muscle tendon changing exercises and so on. And that's kind of where I am today. It's like I've come out of the cave, and now I'm teaching things very different from what I used to, but I believe much more powerful and have a lot more positive benefit to humanity as a whole in terms of health, in terms of longevity, and that big word, happiness.
Well, that's great. I know that. You know, I've spent some time with you years ago, and we always knew that the internal exercises and the internal type force was much more powerful than the external. And I guess as people evolve, they start to realize that. Man, I'm wondering, could you tell the people who don't know the difference between the internal focus and the external focus a little bit about that?
I'll do my best. When you think of an external, you look at like boxing and wrestling and taekwondo, judo, karate, and so on. When you think of internal, it's more like Tai Chi and Bagua and Xing Yi. Those are three very popular Chinese martial arts. People have a notion in the West that Tai Chi is just a health exercise. And it is a health exercise, but it's also much more than that. So how can something that looks so soft and harmless be used as a martial art? And how on earth could it possibly be more effective than the really hard style? Well, and the best way to explain it, I guess, is that when you're relaxed and free of tension, in any sport, I don't care if it's tennis, golf, or swimming, or swinging a baseball bat, or whatever, the more relaxed you are, the less tension you have, the more effective you are. And the same goes with your work day. No matter what you're doing throughout the day for your profession or career, if you're more relaxed, you're going to be more effective. And so what I really study is just keeping myself as free of tension and as relaxed as possible. The focus is more on the breathing, The focus is more on being like water rather than a rock. And so water easily surrounds a stone and over time withers it and beats it and defeats it. So that's, I guess, the quickest way I can tell you in the time we have is when you're more like water and you flow and you're energetic, you have more power than something that's hard. You throw a rock into a swimming pool, it sinks and it's surrounded. You could say it's defeated. It's drowned. And you can throw 10 more rocks into that pool, and the pool is still going to be there. It's going to conquer the stone. And so people will wonder, well, how can you do that? How can you be softer and more fluid and be tougher? Because we've been taught that hardness is toughness. But in all my experience, not just in the Chinese martial arts, but in the Russian martial art, like Sistema, taught by Vladimir Vasiliev, it's softness that wins. It's being free of tension that wins. And you have to experience it to realize how true it is. But over and over again, I've seen this be true.
You hit on something very interesting when you just said you have to experience it. And you mentioned a little bit earlier that, you know, we're taught that being strong or being a certain way brings about a certain accomplishment, let's say. And it's kind of like everyone's taught this, whether we're taught this at school, you know, be the strongest and the most aggressive and you'll achieve the most and whatnot. This is completely outside of Western thinking, per se.
For the most part, yes, it is. But even then, if you get around the highest level people in any profession, and I'll just use sports as the metaphor because it's easier for me to talk about that, but the same applies to really anything. I mean, would you rather go to a surgeon who's nervous and uptight or one who's, I mean, ideally you would never go to a surgeon, but if you had to for something, you'd want to go to a surgeon who was calm and had a pleasant demeanor and was confident and had a tremendous bedside manner, not one who's nervous, uptight, type A, completely stressed out. If someone shakes your hand and he grips it really tight, we assume that, wow, this person is honest. This person is, he's trustworthy, and so on. But if you shake hands with somebody who's very energetic and understands the internal martial arts, they don't grip your hand and try to break it, but yet you feel like your hand is just stuck into a catcher's mitt, let's say. It's engulfed, but it's not a hard squeeze at all. In fact, it might barely be squeezing at all, if at all. But you don't feel like, oh, this person's not honest. He didn't shake my hand really tight. But any sport, like my son, he plays baseball. My daughter is in dance and swimming. And they have private coaches as well as what I teach them. And as you move up the chain and find better and better coaches, what do they tell you? They tell you to relax your shoulders, relax your hands, relax your body, to breathe deeper, and to do the same things. Now, in the beginning, when you first start learning these sports, and you have coaches who aren't at the highest levels, they don't tell you that at all.
Not at all.
And so you spend the first few years learning to use as much muscle as you can, to try as hard as you can, And then all of a sudden, you get somebody who's really at the top of the game, who's really done it, and they say, the more you get out of your own way, the faster you'll be, the quicker your hands, the more effective you'll be. In golf, as well as baseball, you try to hit the ball as hard as you can, and it won't go anywhere. But if you relax and let your hands and the bat do the work, the club do the work, all of a sudden, the ball's flying a mile. And it doesn't feel like you did it.
Go ahead.
And it doesn't feel like you did anything. You're puzzled. You're going, man, I barely swung. And look what happened.
Yeah, it's amazing. If you read anything about Tiger Woods, you hear that his father, Earl Woods, who's passed away now, but Earl trained him in Qigong and Tai Chi and many of the martial relaxation programs, and that's been applied to his golf game, and look at how he is in his golf.
Yeah, he did all right. He's, you know, he had success at a very early age that continued. And some people would say, well, don't start a child so early learning a sport and so on. And I'm of the belief that there is no definitive answer on what age to start someone. My son started playing baseball when he was almost 10. And he's done okay. Other boys started when they're 4 or 5. They've done okay. So there's no definitive answer on when to start, but the quicker you can get them to understand the principles of breathing, physical and mental relaxation, centering, focusing, keep your mind off the negative, don't dwell on the mistakes and failures, keep your eyes mostly on what you do when you do things right, and you'll get along pretty good. But if you get frustrated and get upset when you're not doing well, that will only create more of that. So I remember about 3 years ago working with my son one night and explaining to him how to be free of tension. And he said to me, I've never not been full of tension when I'm playing. I've always had tension, and I've done okay. Now you're telling me to not have it? He now understands that what Dad was telling him 3 years ago was right on. And thankfully, I have other coaches to work with him who played at the big league level who are telling him the same thing. So it's not just that his father's a little strange.
Right.
It's yeah.
Well, he's getting confirmation.
Yeah, from many sources. Anyway, his game's going pretty well, I hope.
He sure is. As an eighth grader, he was a starter on the varsity. In Florida, if you go to a private school and you're in middle school and you're good enough, you can bump up and play on the varsity. So he was a starter as an eighth grader. This year he's a freshman. And,
right.
And all of this was done, by the way. He's now 14. Again, he started when he was almost 10. So inside of 5 years, by applying these principles, you can move ahead really fast. You can move ahead of all the other people who are learning the physical-only approach, which I'm sure you both agree is kind of ignorant because there isn't anything that is only physical. Now, you can deny the other aspects of it, but that doesn't mean they're not there.
Yeah.
Matt, there's so many choices out there these days with different protocols, different types of workouts. What makes body weight fitness your personal choice when it comes to optimal fitness? talking about the physical aspect?
Well, from a physical aspect alone, the way it was explained to me was to look at nature and to look at animals in the wild. Now, you could also look at animals in a zoo, but the wild is easier to understand. But if you look at animals in the wild, in nature, they don't lift weights, and they stretch, and they move around, and they climb trees, and they wrestle, and they run sprints. And everything is done with their own body weight or the weight of, let's say, a lion with her offspring, and you got primates that have theirs and so on. Okay, so maybe they're carrying their babies up a tree, or maybe the lion picks up her cub by the nape of the neck. Okay, but that's natural. These are natural things, and so if you look at how they move, the martial arts, in large part, were created by watching animals and how they moved. Well, this doesn't mean you never use a weight or you never use a tool. What it does mean is that the majority of what you do can be done with your own body weight. And you just get yourself into positions that you've never been in before or that you haven't been in lately, and you start moving. So you get into a push-up position, and you think, oh, well, that's not going to make you strong. Oh, yeah, it is. Well, what if you can do 50? Is it going to make you stronger after that? Well, then go to one arm. When you can use one arm, then go to fingers. When that's too easy, then go into a handstand. And with two hands, and then one hand, and then and so on and so forth.
So what if you can't do a push-up?
And you start from your knees, or you start against a wall and you press, or you get into a hold. You get into a push-up position and you just hold for time. And isometrically you can press against the floor and keep your spine straight and your core pulled in. You'll then get stronger. So if you've ever watched, like last week, I believe the BKS Iyengar passed away at age 95. If you watch what he did with his body, at a so-called advanced age, you go, let's see you try that. Let's see you try to do that. You've got this idea that if you use your own body weight, whether you're doing yoga or Pilates or my program, combat conditioning, that it doesn't really require strength is just totally false. It requires a lot of strength, and it requires balance and coordination and so on. But on the other hand, if you sit on a apparatus, a machine of some sort, everything is balanced for you. Everything is in place. All you got to do is lift it. That's not natural. That's not the way animals in the wild would accomplish it. And also, animals, if you look at them, they're all meditative by nature. They don't just exercise. They also take time to rest. They take time in between their movements. But a significant part of the day for many animals is getting into a specific posture and holding it. Mm-hmm. So whether you're talking a cat or a dog, or whether you're talking a crane or many other kinds of birds. So you'll see here in Florida, you'll see birds on the side of a lake, and their wings are spread out, and they hold that position for long periods of time. Well, put your arms out to the side and see how long you can hold them, like a bird. It's not that easy.
It seems like it would be, but it isn't.
Right, right. Or stand on one leg like a stork and hold that position, see how long you last. And
right.
And now you're getting into balance and strength.
Balance, strength, agility, endurance, and flexibility as well. Because in order to get, let's say, in that, what I call a Hindu push-up, which has two of the positions in yoga they call downward dog and upward dog, are contained in that type of push-up. To get into those positions requires flexibility. To do the push-up requires strength and flexibility. And then there's also balance and agility involved. One of the other differences with this type of body weight training exercise that I do is that you're working with your spine, not just your thoracic or your lower vertebrae, but also your cervical vertebrae. And last time I checked, the spine was sort of important. But yet, when you look at the weight training, how much of the work they do works the spine or is designed to make the spine more flexible, to make it stronger, to energize it. So I believe a lot in also training the neck and on the floor as well as standing or sitting, and you have so many health problems today that are from the neck up, not just soreness in the neck, but migraine headaches, Alzheimer's, dementia, concussions, which is not a disease, but that's definitely a problem if you get hit a few times there, and aneurysm, stroke, etc. Well, in the Chinese way of looking at things, they look at the turtle or the tortoise, Wu Gui, as the symbol of longevity. And one of the things I learned many years ago is, why does the tortoise live so long? Well, they had an answer. He's always moving his neck. Well, when you're always moving your neck and doing exercises for your neck, it stimulates flow to the brain. When the brain is getting sufficient blood flow and action because of the movements of the neck, it then trickles down. Again, last time I checked, from the neck up, we have the thyroid gland, we got the pituitary gland, we have the pineal gland, we have the brain stem. We, you know, it's sort of important.
Matt, if someone has an injury in the neck, what do they do to recuperate? There's a point where if somebody's injured that they may not be able to extend into certain exercises, yet you want to be able to keep the flexibility and the blood flow, as you said.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a whole series of neck training exercises from the feet, but the difference is in what most people would show. For example, you go to a gym, they'd either put a harness on your head and have some weights attached to it, or maybe put you on a neck machine where you're pressing against the pad to lift some weights. My experience is that exacerbates to make it worse. So I believe in just starting very slowly, turning your neck from side to side, but doing it slowly and doing it with your breath. So if you are just looking straight ahead, for example, and you inhale quickly and then exhale as you turn your head to the left toward your left shoulder, but you move slowly, almost like you're doing Tai Chi, you'll get to a point where the neck starts to get tight. The muscles are tense. And then at that point, you just stop and you give a command to your muscles in your neck to relax and sink. When it's done that for a second or two, then you slowly move your neck back to the starting position, and then you exhale and slowly go to the right. Once again, you find where it, when it gets tense. Now, instead of pushing through the tension, you just let it be there, but you tell yourself to relax. So one of the things that I do is give people different mental images as well as the breathing. So, but just by giving yourself a command to relax and giving those muscles a command, they will start to do so. Back in 2002, I did a DVD with two Chinese acrobats, and these women could put their body into any position, you can imagine. I mean, people think I'm flexible. I'm nothing compared to these two women. And so I asked the women, you know, what are you doing to enhance your flexibility? Is there something you can tell us that works? And the one lady said that they don't have any special breathing technique, which surprised me, okay? And to this day, I'm not sure that it's really copping to the full truth, all right? But let's just say it is. And she said, what we do is we get in a position and we command the muscles in that area to relax, and your muscles will obey you. You just keep sending the message. Well, I had a man, his name's Nigel Stewart. He's been a great customer of mine for maybe 15 or more years, and he lives in Bermuda. He was 57 at the time, and he was trying to do an exercise that's more advanced. It's not something I would recommend for somebody who's had the neck injuries. I would start them much slower. But Nigel was trying to do a bridge where he's got the weight on his head and he's trying to move his forehead close to the mat and touch his nose to the mat. Well, he couldn't do it, and he couldn't even come close. And he tried with all his might to force it. And it's a funny story because he literally skidded across his floor or his carpet on the top of his head, trying to ram his nose to the mat. And he tore skin off his head and ended up getting a big scab there. Well, he bought that DVD from me, and he's like, oh, really? Just tell my neck muscles and my trapezius and the spinal erectors to relax? Really? So he began doing that, and within a couple of weeks, he not only had his chin down on the mat, his nose down on the mat, he had his chin. Everything loosened up. All of a sudden, even at 57 years young, he was pliable and flexible. He was stunned. I can't believe this. Well, I said, believe it. It's true. So that when getting back to your question, if somebody has neck injuries, you just start them slowly, and it's all done with the breath and giving the muscles a command to relax, and then go through a number of other different movements, up and down, in circles, and so on. And if you do it slowly and you do it with your breath and you keep and you remember to not force anything. And be slow and make haste slowly. Then you'll get along. You'll continually improve. Will the neck get stronger? Yes, it will. Well, how? You weren't using weights. The weight of your head is a weight.
Right.
And assuming you have something inside your skull, it's enough to get you going.
Right. And the breath seems to be a big key into all of these exercises.
It's huge. I mean, when you do something, and again, most strength training teaches to hold the breath and to release it at the end of exertion. But in the Russian martial art, they teach the opposite. They say, no, 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 no. You need to be exhaling the entire time you're moving. So if I'm doing a push-up, I don't wait to the end to exhale. I'm exhaling the whole way up. And, well, how could that help me? Well, get on the floor and do some, and you'll find out. So Chinese martial arts, a very similar approach. They tend to have more of an inhale through the nose, exhale through the nose, until it gets a real strong exertion. At that point, then you'd exhale through the mouth. But the Russian martial art is fascinating because their inhale through the nose, exhale through the mouth primarily. That's not their only way, but it's primarily what you're taught in the beginning. And it doesn't matter what it is you're doing, whether you're walking, whether you're running, or doing sit-ups, push-ups, or squats, or anything else, you're aware of that breathing. And it just makes a tremendous difference. So a lot of what I've done is, you know, over this last several years that I've been in my cave was just look at, okay, how do the Chinese explain this? How do the Japanese explain this? How do the Russians explain this? And then find the common thread of all of them and be able to explain to people which idea I like best for which situation. And so it's profound insight, but in all of these different areas of the world, they all said to breathe. They didn't say, none of them said, the Chinese don't say hold your breath when you exert and then at the end let it out. No, they're still breathing through the whole thing, but it's just a matter of do we do it through the nose or through the mouth? So the details.
I love what you said about going slowly, because when you move the body slowly, the information, the brain receives more information. And it's very powerful to
down. You got that right. I had a client over last week, and I gave him some neck exercises. Now, this guy, he was about 350 pounds when he started with me about 6 weeks ago. Now he's down to about 320, or he's under 320, so he's doing a great job. But he's a big guy. And so I started him with certain things, and then each week I give him something else, and I add things. And so I started giving him some neck exercises, and I told him to move slowly. I said, if you move fast, you won't feel where you have tension. You won't really feel where you have knots, where the muscles are contracting. So he didn't believe me at first. He's like, I can do a neck roll and I don't feel anything. But, you know, rolling his head and his neck in a circle. He does it fast. He doesn't feel anything. Feels comfortable. I said, okay, now do it slowly. And he started doing it slowly, and he's like, oh, my God, I feel it's locking up right here. I feel it's really tense here and hurts and it's painful. And I said, see what I'm talking about? When you go fast, you can hide the problem. And you can, in some ways, hide the pain. When you go slowly, very difficult to hide. Because somewhere along the line, you're going to find what area of the muscle or tendon or whatever that you're working with is still in pain, still has some trauma, still has some tension that hasn't been released yet. When you do it slowly, you'll find where it is, and you can release it.
So the person can release their own tension as opposed to having it massaged out or some kind of body work. You're basically saying that a person can do this themselves with this kind of workout.
I'd be the last person to say don't get a massage or don't get any body work. I want to say that first because I believe that body work can enhance all of the things we're talking about, but you would be amazed how much you can do on your own. And I like to enhance things with the help of someone else, but a tremendous amount of it, yes, you can do on your own. You can literally, doing these neck exercises and the exercises I have for the spine, as well as the other areas of the body, but you can feel and hear the bones reset, the vertebrae reset. And we're doing it slowly, so there's no pain involved. You'll just hear click, click. Something just fell into place. Massage therapists generally don't, you know, in the U.S., not in China and Thailand and Japan and so on, but in the U.S., they're really apprehensive about making their clients' bones and their spine crack and make noises. They're afraid of being sued, you know. So in this case, you can give yourself your own chiropractic type of massage by doing this. But in addition to that, there are self-massage techniques. Like even for your neck, I mean, if you put both your palms on the back of your neck and you rub one way and the other one the other way, you'll start to hear inside your own noggin, muscles and such being pulled and released. You'll hear the sound of it. So, yes, you can do a tremendous amount of it on your own. You could, if you want, do just this and never get a professional massage or chiropractic or, you know, acupuncture. And all of those I'm a big fan of and think the world of, but I use it as an enhancement to see how far I can go, how much healthier can I get, rather than, oh, I better go see the chiropractor or the acupuncturist because I'm in pain. So, give you a funny story. We went to a sporting goods store one day, and we were looking at one of these inversion tables where you hook your feet in, and then you roll over, and now you're inverted. You're upside down. Your head is facing the floor. Your feet are up. And I remember saying to the staff person, I said, I'd like to get one of these. He goes, okay, you like this one or a different one we had? I said, well, what's the difference? He explained the difference. And, well, like I said, I just want this one. He goes, okay, what's wrong with your back? And I said, nothing's wrong with my back. He says, well, why do you want this table? It's kind of like, hey, mind your own business, all right? I said I want it. Just go get it for me. You know? I want it because I want to be even healthier. I don't want it because I have back pain or there's something wrong with my back. So it's a different way of thinking, I think, to have this sort of no-limit thinking of how healthy can I get? How strong and flexible and agile can I make my spine?
Absolutely, because then you're in the question rather than saying or making a decision on how good can it get. You're in the question of it, which leaves it open to possibility.
Mm-hmm.
It makes so much more sense.
Mm-hmm.
To be lifted out of that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of being in the reactive responsive orientation, where the only time you do anything for your health is when you're sick or in pain. Well, then what do you do when you're no longer sick? Yeah, what do you do when you're not sick or in pain? Well, you stop doing what you did to get better. Oh, so what happens then? Well, it's only a matter of time, and you're sick and in pain again. Well, how about this? How about if that's what gets you started, okay, no problem. You're sick and you're in pain. So let's get out of pain. And when you're out of pain, how about instead of stopping, ask the question, how healthy can I be? How much? And it's a matter of choosing to be healthy rather than choosing to just be free of sickness and pain. No, no. That's only one level. Now let's be healthier than we are, so that we don't have to go see the doctor because we train. Because we,
that's the idea.
Right.
What about the length of time to work out? Can you get a good workout in a short period of time?
You sure can. You sure can. I always tell people, if you give me 15 minutes and you do that every day, you can, without fail, for the next 6 months or a year, just with three exercises. Well, it's actually incorrect, me saying that, because in the beginning, you can't even do 15 minutes. But and I've always tested people, say, okay, do these three exercises, the Hindu squat, bridge, and push-up. And, well, you're really finished in 3 or 4 minutes, and you're lying there in a pool of sweat, and, man, I can't believe I couldn't do this, right? Well, over a few weeks, you'll increase endurance and strength, and you get healthier, so you can go 15 minutes. But in the beginning, you just do something every single day, and without fail, just get started and keep moving, and you're going to get better. So the length of time is not really the key. It's really more about, a friend of mine, I said to him, I have a client I'm working with, and he needs to lose about 120 pounds. And I told him, let's take off 2 pounds a week. Every week, you're down 2 pounds. And the friend said, he could lose more than that. And I said, well, sure he could. But I'd rather he be a minimalist who succeeds than a maximalist who fails. You just thought, huh? Never thought of it that way. Right? So when you try to be a maximalist and do everything you can to the max every single day, well, maybe you're not training anymore after 2 or 3 weeks. So this doesn't mean be weak and don't do anything and don't try. I don't mean that by minimalist. What I mean is that you have achievable goals that you can hit week after week after week.
Right.
So
that's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, some people, they start off, they're so deconditioned that if you tell them to walk 3 miles every day, 3 miles, they can't even go three blocks. So give me 1 minute today. And tomorrow, give me 1 minute and 1 second. The next day, give me 1 minute and 11 seconds. Well, you know, it's an amazing thing, and I learned this by studying the Japanese Kaizen principle, that if you just have small incremental improvements every day, not big improvements every day, but a small incremental improvement, that'll keep you going. And so this 1 minute at a time philosophy actually works really well. And somebody goes out to walk for 1 minute, what are the chances that the person will stop after a minute?
No.
Not real high.
I'm walking for sure, right?
Right. Not real high, you know, but it gets them going. There's a lady friend of mine, she's got a 14-year-old son who didn't want to do his homework. And she says to him, why don't you just do it for 1 minute? And I had talked with her and I said, you know, beginning is half done. Beginning is half the battle. If you just get started. So this 1 minute idea literally tricks you into action. And because you think it's only a minute, you're in the present moment. And you forget that it was
right.
Just a minute.
I think actually we only have a couple of minutes left.
Okay.
Yeah, how can people train with you or learn from you or get started? What's the
Well, the easiest way is through my membership site. That's how a lot of people get going with me, and it's a program where over the next 12 months, we're continually putting up new videos and new content, special reports, and so on that teach people in detail the things that we're talking about on this call. So it's really a great way to come along with me and train. Like having a school without walls, no matter where you live in the world, you can learn from me and you can train. And so the website for that, we actually have it in your name, so Dr. Woody. So they can go to mattfury.com/drwu, and that'll take them to a page where they can find out more about that program. Coming and training with me in person and so on can be discussed after you're a member of that, of the Matt Fury Inner Circle.
All right. Well, that's great because
yeah.
I know my listening audience and he loves the, you know, people are looking for something right now and I've spent, you know, some years training with you and really got a lot out of it. And that's why we asked you to come on as a guest to really help people out in this time that it's very much needed.
Definitely.
Well,
thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. It's been my pleasure.
So let's give the website again.
Okay. It's Matt Fury, MattFury. URE.com/DRWU. So Dr. Wu. MattFury.com/Dr. Wu.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with us. And we look forward to spending some time with you in the near future.
Awesome. I appreciate it very much, and have a good evening.
Many blessings.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, that was a great call, E.
That was.
He's got a tremendous amount of energy, and he's a pleasure to speak with. I love the way he explains energy, how to use things, use the breath, the visualization, commanding your muscles to move. I mean, it's just awesome.
Well, he gave a lot of tips and tricks.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll be on again in 2 weeks. Today is, what's the date today, the 2nd?
Yep.
So the 16th we'll be on at 8 o'clock at night on bdsradio.com, Energy Medicine.
/energy medicine.
Right. Okay. Well, anyway, if you have any questions, please feel free to write us. You can go to our website. It's right on the page of the show. and we look forward to sharing some great guests with you in the very near future.
Join us every first and third Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or listen again online at bbsradio.com/energymedicineradio. Wishing you the best in your health, wealth, and happiness.